Blog Talk Radio.
The following broadcast is brought to you by the iGolf Sports Network.
Golf Talk Live is sponsored by the iGolf Sports Network and Golf Tips Magazine. Here's Andrew to tell you more about our sponsors.
iGolf Sports is a live stream broadcast and media production company providing quality programming designed to attract the golfing enthusiast. And Golf Tips, the game's most in-depth instruction magazine, including reviews on the latest equipment, tips from top teaching professionals, all designed to help you improve from tee to green. Welcome to Golf Talk Live with your host, Ted Odorico. Join Ted each week as he speaks with some of the best in golf. This week's special guest will join us a bit later. But first up is another great discussion on Coach's Corner. So let's introduce tonight's Coach's Corner panel.
All right. Good evening, everybody. And once again, welcome to Golf Talk Live. I'm your host, Ted Odorico. And as it said in the intro, we've got a great show for you this evening. We're going to be joined a little bit later on by my special guest, Dr. Jeremy James. He's the founder and chief experience officer for Golf Forever. And he'll be joining us on the second half of the program. Of course, we're going to start things off as we normally do with Coach's Corner, and I will tell you a little bit about that and my special guest this evening on the panel in just a moment. But let me remind everybody, of course, we are live every Thursday evening from 6 to 8 p.m. Central. And for those of you tuning live, welcome to the show. And just a quick reminder for those that maybe tune in a little bit later or can't listen to the whole show, you can go to blogtalkradio.com/golftalklive and just scroll down to the on-demand section. And after this show, this live broadcast airs, it will be auto-recorded, so you can go and listen in the on-demand section. You can listen to this show in its entirety in that section. So always available whenever you need it, and always excited to have you here. I'm going to bring on my Coach's Corner panel buddy, as I call him. He's going to be joining me tonight for this evening's discussion. Of course, I'm talking about my good friend Clint Wright. He is a 30-plus year member of the PGA and a partner at TGM Golf. TGM Golf, as you remember, is a big proponent of the R3 approach, and I certainly consider him, as do many others, to be one of the best covering the short game. He says he's retired, but I don't buy that for a minute, and he's also one of my favorite guests here on the Coach's Corner panel. So please welcome tonight's guest on the panel, Clint Wright. Clint, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Ted. Thank you. And yes, I am clandestinely retired, but I can always be talked out of it, you know?
Yeah. I don't believe that for a minute. You're hopping around all over the place. You're still doing stuff, but
yeah.
We appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
I know what you mean. Let's rephrase that. You're trying to. You've been trying to now for, the last several years.
Yeah, we're
somebody
trying.
Somebody keeps pulling you out of the woodwork.
We're getting more successful at it all the time, though.
Yeah, I don't blame you. All right, so this is your first appearance this season on the panel, and
yeah.
Really excited. Always glad to have you back, and it's hard to believe this is season 12 doing this show. I believe it's 10 for the Coach's Corner segment. I think it was 2 years before we started this up. So it's pretty much a decade that you've been doing this, because you were on from the very beginning.
Oh.
So.
We've been having a great time. I did the other day, went back, and some friends were asking me about the show. We're talking about it, and I said, well, can you do it on a podcast? I said, yeah, let me just pull it up here. And we pulled up a couple of podcasts from, I think, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And I said, you know, that was, we had a lot of fun, and we were going to continue to have some fun and hopefully help some people, you know, get improved in what they're doing in their golf game. And I know that there's benefit to everything we say, but there's also the opposite side of it as well. We just can't overdo things. I was working with a young man today, and he was just overdoing things, just trying too hard.
Yeah.
So we hope people take what we say and sneak up on it. Just don't go, you know, overboard with it.
Right, exactly. Well said. And, you know, I think really what it boils down to a lot of this is what we're really trying to do here, especially on the Coach's Corner panel. The interviews are a little bit different. Obviously, we're introducing new individuals to who have either been in the golf industry for a little while or maybe are new to the business and they've got a great product or service that they want to offer. So that's really what that's for. The Coach's Corner panel is really just to sort of lay a basic groundwork, if you will, with some of the questions and some of the topics we talk about. Obviously, we're not here to specifically instruct everybody out there. It's just not possible in this format, but we're going to certainly give you some tips and things that you can, if you're working with a pro, you can go back and talk to them about and saying, hey, you know, I was listening to this the other night and they brought this up. Let's have a conversation and put something together that's going to help my game. But certainly there are going to be some nuggets that are going to be taken away over these panel and have been over the last, as I say, about a decade that we've been doing the Coach's Corner panel. And so we're going to see if we can do that tonight. So I know that, as I mentioned in the intro, you're obviously a big proponent of the short game. And I know we've talked about a lot of things, but we're going to dial in on some specific things I want to ask you here and get you to expand. So let's talk about bunkers. Again, I know we don't have the visual, so we're just going to have to be there's a lot of different types of bunker shots. And let's talk about how we play some of them. So I'm going to give you some examples. And, you know, you can, as best as you can, sort of describe really what we're trying to do here. Obviously, we want to get out of the sand and get back in play. And if we're in a greenside bunker, obviously, we want to try to get on the green as close as we can to the pin and set ourselves up for a good shot or a good putt, if you were. So what are some of the types of bunker shots? So I can think of one particularly. We've all had this at some point where we get a buried lie, where the ball has just buried itself in the sand, maybe just the top. What are we doing on the shot like this? How are we setting up everything from how we're addressing the ball and our stance? Are we open? Are we closed or what have you? And what about the club face? What are we doing here?
Okay. Well, the first thing that we probably can say about any bunker shot is for people to understand the sand was put in this hole to help you, not to hurt you. It's there to help you. Because if you wanted to make it a very difficult shot, you just dug a hole, left the dirt there, not put any sand in it. So we want to view the sand as our friend, not our enemy. So with that in mind, we understand the ballistics that if we hit anywhere around that ball with a progressively, you know, accelerating swing plane, the ballistics of the sand is going to send the ball out in front of it. Okay? So it's very much like a, you know, ammunition. You got the pellets in front of the propellant, and you fire your gun, and it the ballistics shoot it out in front of it. So we want to view the sand as our friend, and particularly when you have a buried lie. In my opinion, it's one of the easiest bunker shots to get out of the bunker. Not necessarily get it close to the hole, but to get it out. Because the tighter the sand is around the ball, okay, like kind of a plug line, not a fried egg, but it's kind of plugged in there, that's, the ballistics there is going to work to your advantage in a great sense. Because if you hit anywhere around that ball, the sand is going to go. So one of the best advice that I ever got as a player and a coach was from Dan Murphy from – and he has passed away not too long ago when I first started working. And he said, just look, whatever sand is behind the ball, put the sand on the green. If that sand goes on the green, the ball's in front of it, it'll be on the green too. So our objective here is with a, with that buried lie or plugged lie, we want to take the sand that's about an inch to inch and a half behind that ball, and we want to be aggressive enough to take that sand and put it on the green. And the ball will be out in front of it. Now, when you have that flat, is it kind of buried lie, the ball's not going to have any spin on it, so it's going to hit the ground running. So with those shots, the objective is just get it out of the bunker, get it up there where you can chip again or putt it, whatever. But the one thing that, that I see a lot of people do with bunker shots is that they don't understand that the ball is not their target. The sand behind the ball is the target. So what I encourage people to do is find the bottom of their swing. They have to practice this, have to work on it. Where, in relationship to your feet, your legs, and your knees, where is the bottom of your swing at? And I want to position that bottom over the sand I want to hit, not over the ball. So that means the ball is going to be played more forward than you think, because I'm going to let the club bottom out on the sand, which again puts the ball in front of the sand. So generally I encourage people to think about it this way, is that if I'm in a bunker shot, I'm going to open my hips up a little bit. I want the club a little more steep, but I want to put the ball up to where I might be playing a driver up off my left side or at least my lead side. That's going to put the ball in front of the bottom of my arc. And if I target the sand and be aggressive, the biggest problem we also see with bunker plays is they people won't swing at it firm enough or they just quit. And if they'll pay attention to that, most of the time the sand behind their ball doesn't get out of the bunker. So the ball's not going to get out either. All right. So they still need to be aggressive. Aim and, you know, set the ball up in front. Set up in order to hit behind the ball. Swing aggressively and let the sand help you get it out. Use the ballistic of the sand. Like I said, put the sand on the green, the ball will be in front of it. Okay? And
now, typically,
that holds true with pretty much any bunker shot. And that's just not one that's plugged.
Now, on a plug lie like that, though, are we sort of keeping the club face? Because a lot of people, you know, you hear different versions of it.
Okay.
Some say, you know, it's okay
that
to open a little bit. Or is it okay
no.
to keep it square? Give us an idea of how the
all
club
right.
face fits
the,
in here.
The more that you have, in my opinion, the more fried egg you have, therefore there's more sand you've got to move. You got to get through it, okay? So if I've got a fried egg, I'm going to square the club or actually toe it in a little bit. That's going to make the club dig, and therefore dig through that little crater and get to the sand that's right behind the ball. Again, trying to move that sand out of the bunker. So if I've got that crater that's maybe 3 inches around and I need to get to 2 inches, I've got to let the club dig through that first inch of sand to get to the sand I want to hit out of the bunker. So I've got to let it dig. If I use the bounce there, what's going to happen? If I take that fried egg and I lay the club open, it's going to add bounce to the bottom of my club. That bounce is going to make it slide through very high into the sand profile. It will slide through the high profile of the sand and it'll generally belly the ball. The fried egg, I want to turn it down to where the club's going to dig through it, not bounce through it. But again, you have to be aggressive, okay?
Now, in the case of the plug lie, though, same thing applies. We're going to keep that club face square. Okay.
Absolutely.
That's what I was tight.
Right. If it's plugged kind of tight, you want to still let it to dig because you want to move that sand. Only thing you think about, and when you got that little plug lie, is how can I best move the sand behind my ball out of the bunker? And if it's plugged in there, let the club dig a little bit. Don't let it open. I like the idea of using the bounce and the ball sitting on top of the sand, not in the sand. Does that make sense?
Gotcha. Makes perfect
sense.
All right,
the ball is in the sand, let it dig. If the ball's sitting on top of the sand, let it slide.
Good advice. Let's back up the fairway a little bit, and let's talk about a fairway bunker, because this is going to be a little bit different. So we might have, let's say, 130 yards to the green, and
right.
we're in a fairway bunker. We're going to play this shot a little bit differently. I'll let you pick
whatever example
you want to give, whether it's just a regular lie or whether it's plugged or whether it's a fried egg, what have you. But talk about typically how things differ a little bit as we move further away. And now, again, we're still in the sand. The bunkers are a little bit different
right.
than what we see typically up around the green. So let's talk about that for a minute.
Right. Usually you'll see if the golf course, in my opinion, is maintained correctly, the fairway bunkers are going to be a little firmer than what you would see on a green side because it is two different circumstances. The fairway bunker is put there in order to shape your eye down the hole, not necessarily create a big hazard. Okay, so I look at this with, again, if the ball is sitting on top of the sand, I'm going to maybe take an extra club where I don't have to swing fully at the shot where I can maybe maintain my balance a little better for better footing. But I'm going to play that shot pretty much the same way I'd play it if I was sitting in the middle of the fairway. I want to hit the ball first, carry it on out. Maybe, again, like I said, not play the, the dead yardage club, take a little extra club where you don't have to swing so hard for better control. Now, if the ball is sitting in the sand or down in the sand a little better, I think my opinion, the way I try to play them, is to take a club just the opposite. I want to take maybe a little less club, play the ball back in my stance as if the ball was sitting in a divot. I want to get a little bit more of a downward blow on it, and therefore I'm going to have less loft on the club I choose. And I want to give myself enough margin to make sure that I get it up over the leading edge of that bunker. Okay, so if you take those circumstances and how you would play out of the fairway, if the ball is sitting on top of the grass or if it's sitting on top of the sand, there's not a dramatic difference in how you play those shots. If the ball happens to get unlucky and get in a little bit of a depression or a divot in the fairway, or if it's down in the sand a little bit, a little fluffier, might got in a groove of a rake, then I'm going to play that shot very similar to if I had a ball sitting in a divot in the fairway. Move the ball back, hit ball first again, and give yourself a little extra loft because you're going to have the ball back in the stance a little bit. But I think what most people do with a bunker shot, fairway bunker, is they think it's really something special or different. It's just you're playing off of a different surface, that's all. It's just not grass. It's sand. So you can hit those shots very similar. Not a dramatic difference in how you would swing the club or approach it, maybe just the club you would choose to hit the shot with.
Yeah, I think a lot of people make, and I think you'd probably agree with this, make more out of it. You know, what's interesting is if you talk to probably the majority of professionals, I'm talking – high level, either, entry tour level players or even on the PGA or LPGA tour, a lot of them will tell you in some circumstance they would want to get into the bunker. If they're in a difficult situation, they would rather the ball fly into the bunker and gives them a better opportunity,
absolutely.
Especially if there's water or other hazards around that potentially could really cost
sure.
them, you know, some serious stroke. So, you know, I've heard that sometimes in some of the interviews and that where they say, the announcer will ask them and say, well, you know, you ended up in the bunker and that. And he said, you know what? I was glad I got in the bunker because the alternative. Right, exactly. And people are scratching their head. You know, the amateurs are scratching their head thinking, well, why would he want to get in the bunker? But again, like you said, if you understand how to properly execute these shots, they're not as difficult as they seem. I just think, you know, a lot of information gets in people's heads. And unfortunately, it's negative information at times. And they just play that loop over and over again. And really, if they understand how to really handle these types of shots, they're going to find – and obviously, you have to get out and practice, but you can't just
certainly
not do that. But I think
that's
if you
right.
practice that, but if you understand the technique and what you're trying to accomplish, I think it becomes much easier, and you're not as afraid or as intimidated with bunker shots. Agree?
Oh, absolutely. Here's the thing that when I'm working with somebody in the bunker, I can't hit bunker shots. I says, look, you have to understand that we're talking greenside bunker here, not necessarily fairway bunkers. The greenside bunker shot is the easiest shot in golf. And they look at me like I'm crazy. So how would you say that? I said, yeah, it's the only shot that you don't have to hit the ball. You just got to get close. It's like horseshoes.
No.
It is if you have the right attitude about seeing the sand as your friend and not your enemy, and you position yourself properly to utilize the sand, you just got to get close. And the biggest problem I see with people in bunkers is they don't finish their swing. When I was growing up as a kid, my dad would always tell me, it's better to be in the bunker on the other side of the green than the one you're standing in.
Right.
His way of telling me to be aggressive.
Yep.
Don't try to pooch it out of the bunker. Lay the club open, pick your spot out, and be aggressive. And, you know, and that I think that idea goes a long way. Use the sand as your friend, and don't be afraid to hit it. I mean,
right.
And you'll get out. It may not be close, but you'll be out of the bunker you're in, and then you have to play from there.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that you have to look at is one of the worst case scenarios is you have to hit the shot again out of the same bunker because you weren't aggressive enough to get it out. And, you know, and that's what we see a lot of times out in the practice range. And
I'll give you a great example of how people you have to look at this. And the rule has changed a little bit, but not much. Do you know that there's a simple one-stroke way to get out of the bunker you're in? is clear the ball unplayable. It's a one-shot penalty, and you can take it back to where you hit it from.
Yep.
And it only takes you one to get it out.
Right. Right.
It used to be, that used to be rule number 28. I don't know what it is now, but it used to be 28. So.
Yeah, but, and you know, you've got to. It's like we've said before, you know, many times. You've got to just practice, and people don't, you know, because it's not, you know, and I guess the best way to describe it is, you know, practicing out of the bunker is not sexy. Everybody wants to hit their driver. You know, that's
sure.
king, and that's what they've been. You know, that's what the marketing has told them. Hey, you know, if you can drive this thing 300 yards, you're going to be, you know, scoring better. But the truth is the opposite. But
You've never seen a commercial with a guy hitting his sand wedge out of the bunker.
No, exactly. And it's bad, really, because it would probably be some good advice.
Terrible.
You know.
Absolutely.
All right, let's move on. Okay, short game stats. You know, this is a thing that we've talked about as professionals for many, many years. What are they? What are the stats that really that we want people to sort of keep track of? And there's a lot of great ways. I mean, you can manually do it, you know, jot some notes down. Obviously, there's a lot of great apps and technology that will actually keep track of that for you. So what are some of the short game stats that really, from our standpoint, we really want our students to follow and understand? And how can they learn from that information? Once they have that information, can they extrapolate from that? And obviously, as a coach, what can you learn from those stats as well and use that to benefit them down the road?
Okay, here's the real simple facts about it. Is that very few amateurs that play this game hit more than maybe three or four greens around. Okay? You know, the better amateurs are going to hit, you know, even the pros are hitting 12 or 13. So the guys that are down here shooting 90 to 100, they're hitting two or three greens in regulation. So they're chipping and pitching the ball practically on every hole. So this is a stat that I look for to begin with. I want to know how close their chip shot gets to the hole. Proximity to the hole after you chip it. How close? Then that's going to tell me whether they're putting really good or they're putting really poorly, they're chipping poorly or they're chipping well. Because if you're out there chipping from around the green and your average proximity to the hole after you've chipped the ball is 15 feet, it's not your putter. You're not chipping it close enough. But if you're chipping it in on a proximity of 3 to 4 feet and you're not making any, then we need to look at your putting. Okay, so to me, the most important pitching and chipping the ball from around the, you know, the green complexes, and I would say within 30 yards of the green, okay? Once you get, you know, 40, 50, 60 yards out, we're talking about a different group of stats. At that point, how many did you get on the green and how close they were? But when you're in that 25 to 30-yard range or closer, you know, I need to know how close you're chipping the ball to the hole. That's the, to me, is the linchpin or the keystone stat that you need to know, because that one will tell you whether you need to work on your pitching or whether you need to work on your putting. And it could very well be that you need to analyze what club you're using. It could be that you're pitching the ball good, but you're pitching with too high loft and it's not going far enough, or just the reverse, you're trying to hit too many bump and runs and it's going too far. So that proximity to the hole in chipping, to me, is a stat that I want to know first. Then tell me how many putts you're having and from how far away. Are we lag putting poorly? Are we putting four-footers poorly? What is it? How far am I putting? And, again, if I'm the proximity to the hole.
I think we lost you here. I'm not sure if you can hear me, but there you go.
Okay, proximity to the hole after you chip it, and then proximity to the hole after your first putt. Those stats will tell us where you need to work.
Yeah, and you know what's so important too? I got to point this out. You know, Cindy Miller, who of course has become a good friend of mine, and she's also my co-host on the Women of Golf show that I do Tuesdays. And, you know, she teaches a lot of juniors particularly. I mean, she teaches all levels, but she's got a lot of juniors, and she talks to them quite a bit about this very thing, about the stats. And she said what's really interesting is, you know, a lot of these juniors, they want to go on to play, not necessarily all want to play professionally, but maybe they want to play collegiate and you know, a more advanced game. And they don't keep stats, a lot of them. And when she brings it up, it's kind of like they're scratching, well, why do I need to do that? So, and again, she explains very similar to what you're just doing, is there's information that you can gather from those statistics.
Oh, yeah.
They're going to help you focus on, it's twofold. It not only gives the student a better idea of their own game, but it also helps with the teach professional or coach they're working with, because then they can, you know, custom make a game plan moving forward, saying, okay, because there's no point, you know, just an example.
Absolutely.
You know, if you're a really good putter, as you pointed out, but maybe you're not chipping it close, and you're lacking in chipping, that's good to know. You might be putting okay, but you're missing putts, not because you're a bad putter, because you're not getting it close enough to the hole to take advantage of that good putting.
It's all a percentage game. Yeah, it's all a percentage game. You know, it was kind of interesting if you look at there's a book out there called Every Shot Counts, and it's written by a gentleman that did the shots gained. And he pointed out that when Tiger Woods was dominating the tour, it wasn't that he putted better than anybody else. He just hit it closer than everybody else. So his percentages were just going to be better.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, so that's the whole idea that you're trying to figure out. And kids too, the juniors, we all were, and I'm not saying that we were any different when we were kids. They're very impatient. You know, I sit and watch the young gal, really good young junior player, practicing her putting the other day, and she's a good putter. I walked out and said, you know, you can't putt the ball any better than you're putting. And she said, well, they're still not making them. I said, I didn't say anything about how good an aimer you were.
Right.
I mean, you're a real good putter because you hit it right where you was aimed every time. So why don't you learn and get better at aiming? Same idea. If you're chipping at 10 feet every time and you're making half of those, you're putting pretty good. That's a really great percentage from 10 feet. On the other hand, you're putting way too much pressure on your putting. Let's see if you can't get it in there about 4 feet. The percentages are so much better. So it's a percentage game. You know, you look at the stats, it's all out there. Anybody can see it on PGAtour.com or wherever it's at. And you look at the percentages from 5 feet, 10 feet, 20 feet, and it's obvious that the closer you get it, the better the chances are. You know, Mr. Hogan was always quoted, said, how do you make more birdies? And his answer was, you just hit it closer.
Right.
You know? And so those are the stats that you need to know, without a doubt.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. I think, you know, the average golfer, I think, is looking in the wrong direction when they're assessing their game. And they're not, you know, we always very quickly just talk about, well, you know, you need to improve your short game. Well, of course, you need to improve your short game. But with people that have limited time, you may not be able to have time to practice every area of your short game. So why not focus on the areas that need the most improvement and get them up to snuff with the other parts? So, if, like I said, if you're a good putter, like you said, you can be a great putter, you know, 5 to 10 feet, but your aim might stink, or you're not getting it close enough. So, you know, that's what I'm saying, is you got to understand the stats. And, you know, it's great to take the stats, but you have to understand the stats. And that's where your coach or your teaching pro can have a conversation and help you. All right, let's move on.
I want to move on real quick. Yep. I'm going to tell you what the people should also do. I see everybody and their brother out there with their cameras and their iPads and whatever taking videos of their full swing, but you never see them videotaping their chipping and their putting.
No.
Get some videos to see from behind you, same thing. That's where you can use those videos to your advantage even better. So do that. I think it'd be great. That young lady I was working with, I took some videos of her and showed it to her. Said, oh, okay. You know, you can't deny the video. Yeah.
No, and it goes to what I said earlier. It's like with the long game. You know, the long game is sexy to them, and I'm just throwing that term out there, obviously, but – It's exciting. Yeah. It's more exciting, you know, to belt that ball, you know, a mile than it is to, you know, pitch and chip you know, from a few yards off the green, and
you know,
even on the putting. I mean,
you're
you
right.
Know, that's,
you know,
and so we understand that. So, but
yeah,
you go ahead.
Watch the newscasting on the night. They never show the base hit. They always show the home run.
Right.
Because that's exciting.
Of course. Right.
You know.
Exactly.
So, same thing.
And that's just typical. That's typical.
That's right. That's typical.
You know, a question that I often get, and I'm sure you've had, is how to position yourself off the tee. You know, you want to get, you know, it's about really finding targets and that, but how should a player think when they're approaching a tee shot? So they're standing up, whether it's the first tee or another hole, what should they be looking for? It's not just a matter of looking for a target. They have to sort of think ahead, the process. Well, what should be going through their mind as they prepare to hit that next tee shot?
Well, I think the question you have to divide in and have a conversation about what level of player you're talking about. You take the guy, the lady that's, you know, your average golfer shooting 90 to 100. They should be making some decisions on what club they can get in the fairway. You know, that old thing about fairway and greens. Don't be quite so locked in on this and that and that target. I love to see these guys and ladies take out a 3-wood or something. You know, I just need to get it in the fairway. All right, that's my objective. You know, my objective is to hit it in the fairway. So what is my approach to being able to do that? I don't have a lot of confidence in my driver. I'm hitting this big slice. Well, don't hit it then, because your objective is to hit it in the fairway. So that's your thought. What can I hit here that I can get it in the fairway, downrange far enough that I can maybe move my second shot or third shot closer to the green where I can take advantage of maybe pitching and putting the ball better. You know, I'm a firm believer that there's nobody that plays this game that can't be a good pitcher and putter.
Right.
There's not that much of a physical requirement. Now, there's certain people that just can't hit it 340 yards. Okay,
right.
I mean, it's just plain and simple. But that person could be just as good a chipper and putter as the guy that hits it 340. So with the 90 to 100 shooter, I really want them to see downrange in the fairway, choose the club. It's a matter of making decisions on club selection as much as aiming. Aim it down the middle of the fairway, you know, and just try to hit a club that that you've got great confidence in, and move it down the fairway. Now, if you're talking about more of an accomplished player, then I'm going to start thinking about what I want to hit into the green. I'm going to play that hole from the green back. A great example, of course, that we play here a lot, if you hit the ball with a driver on this par 4 and you hit it down there about 260, 270, you're going to be on a downhill lie trying to hit a ball across the pond onto a green that's just a little bit of you. Very difficult shot.
Yeah.
So my mind there is I'm hitting my 3-wood to lay it back out there at about 110 that's on a flat lot. So I start trying to think, where do I want to play my approach shot into the green from? What's my best yardage? You know, where do I want to be, right side of the fairway, left side of the fairway? Well, in most cases, that's going to depend on what side the flag is of the green. So, again,
yep.
Playing from the green back, what side of the fairway is best for me? How far down that fairway do I want to be to get the easiest shot I can get? So my tee shot and ball off the tee is to try to get my second shot is in the easiest place I can get it. And that's going to depend on how I think I need to play my second shot into the green, which means I'm going to work, from the green back to that approach shot. Par 5, same thing. I don't, you know, if you can get it on there in 2, great. But I want to be thinking about the proper side of that green to pitch from. Do I want to be the right of it, left of it, short of it? Where do I want to be? You know, if the flag is on the front of the green, I might want to lay back a little further where I can spin that wedge. If the green's on the flag, maybe on the back, well, I can run it on up there and hit a little bump and run, let it roll up there. So that level of player is playing from the green back in order to get that tee ball in the easiest place to play from. Yeah. the not so accomplished player just simply needs to hit a club they can get in the fairway. That again is making their next shot easier than it would be if they were playing out of the trees. Okay, so the whole objective is to try to make your next shot as easy as you can, and depending on the level of player, depends on how you approach that. The better player needs to start from the green back. The more average to a not quite accomplished player needs to try to just get it downrange in an easy place to play the second shot from, which means, in my opinion, anywhere in the fairway for that level.
Yeah, I agree. I think for the more advanced player, it really strategy becomes more in play. If you're struggling with your, you know, if you're a high handicapper,
that's right.
And again, that doesn't mean that you're not using a different strategy, I guess is the best way to put it, because
just get it
in a position. Right. You're still both using strategy. The difference with a more advanced player is you can get in a little bit more thought can go into
more
it,
detail.
Where you want to do it, and, yeah, more detail, exactly. And I think that's some great advice. And I think, you know, I think one of the biggest problems, too, I see, you know, not for the accomplished golfer, but for the more beginning golfer or less advanced golfer, is they think, well, if I can just pound it down there, you know, it's a pretty open fit. And what ends up ultimately happening, as you said, if they don't select the right club, now they're in trouble because they've sliced it into the woods or into thick, heavy rough, and now they're, you know, not able to recover as easily as the more advanced player. So now they're, you know, they've just compounded, whereas taking a less club, maybe a three wood or a hybrid, just getting them into a good position in the fairway where they've got a decent lie, you know, a really good lie rather, and are likely going to make a much better approach shot. So I think that's some great advice. Let's talk about chipping for a second here. There's a lot of camps on this here. Obviously, chipping is you're closer up around the green, and it's just a matter of getting it, again, closer to the hole. Some people like to stick with one club. Others learn to use different clubs depending on the circumstances. Do you prefer, if you were speaking to a golfer, do you prefer they choose one or the other, stick with the same old club, regardless of the situation, to chip with, or should they learn to use different clubs, and if so, why?
Well, I believe they learn to use different clubs. I mean, if we're going to use one club, then heck, that's all we would need. I mean, just try to make it work from wherever you're at, you know. So we have an opportunity to have 14 clubs in our bag. So that to me, that means that I'm better off maybe having a few different clubs to try to play with. Okay. So what it really comes down to is that I don't think you can hit a little bump and run with a 60 degree sand wedge, nor do I think you can hit a flop shot with an 8-iron. So I like the idea of narrowing it down into two. Usually, in my opinion, a 56 type wedge, it gives you plenty of loft to hit the higher lofted shots. In today's world, 9-iron, maybe a little bump and run. We used to chip with a 7, but now the 9s are a lot like, you know, loft angles are much lower now. So I like the idea of a person getting comfortable with two clubs, not three or four. You know, two's fine. If they want to go with three, they can go, you know, a 9-iron for a bump and run, let it run out, maybe have a 52 and a 56 or maybe 58, something like that. So what it really comes down to is I want one that's going to be really kind of flat runner, maybe a little mid shot, and then one that I can get up in the air. When I'm short-sighted behind the bunker, I need to be able to get a little bit of flop shot. So I like the idea of two, no more than three, developing certain shots and to where you have that in your repertoire of shots when you get up there, that now you can say, what's giving me the best chance of getting it close? Well, obviously, if I'm short-sighted behind a bunker, a little chip and run is not going to give me the best chance of getting it close. So I got to go up and over. If I'm inside that bunker and got a lot of room to go, then maybe the percentage is now to hit the bump and run. I don't need to put it high up in the air. And we all know that the more I keep the ball on the ground, the better chances I've got. So I think you have to have a multiple number of clubs in order to have those shot patterns that you'll be faced with no matter where you play. Pretty much in every round, you're going to have chip shots you got to go up. You're going to have some chip shots that you have an opportunity to hit the ball low and let it run. And in my opinion, the first question you should ask yourself when you look at these shots to figure it out is, can you roll it on the ground? Can you putt it? If you can putt it, use your putter. If you can't do that, then how much air do I need? And we all know, you know, you've heard this many different ways. The less air you need, the better chances you got.
Right.
You know, keep the ball on the ground if you can. Hit the bump and run. So three clubs, in my opinion, would be the way to go. Or no less, you know, no more than three. You know, I chip
right.
with a 9-iron and a 56.
And
try to
develop
the shots with that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, you know, you have to have some options in your repertoire when you're doing that.
Right.
And I think it goes with that old saying, variety is the spice of life. So. I think
right.
that
yeah, I guess
know,
so.
If you have
yeah.
have a little bit of variety in your and the reason why I asked that is because there's some people, I mean, I've played it in different events with people, and I'll see them, you know, pull out the same club. They get around the green and they're chipping, and I'm not talking about going over a bunker or anything, but just even
right.
a regular
yeah,
chipping or chipping with the same club.
Right.
And sometimes they'll, you know, they've maybe got just a little bit of fringe. They've got to chip it over, and I'll say, well, why don't you use your putter? And, well, no, I like this. It's my favorite club, and it might be a 7-iron, it might be 9-iron,
right.
or whatever. And then I'll see another
right.
situation where it's got to be a little bit more in the air, and they're still hitting with that same club, and they're either
That's
blowing
right.
it past or they're coming up short or
right.
what have you. So I agree with you. I think you have to look at the situation, assess it, what's the best option, and you need to have more than just one option, you know,
yes.
to
absolutely.
Potentially work with. And that's why the pros do it. I mean, you know,
sure.
if you want to learn from the pros, look at how they handle different situations. You know, forget about trying to mimic their swing or you know,
right.
trying to gain more distance. Look at how they assess their situation and how they
right.
take and adapt to that particular situation to get the best outcome for them. So
unfortunately, on television, the only thing you really see is that flop shot or that little where they're
right.
trying to really hit the spinner. You never see them hit the little bump and run. Because again, it's not exciting. It's really workmanlike, and they don't show that on television so much. You know, and the point I can make, if you only got one club, Ted, you have no options. You
right.
only have one thing you can do, you know. So
right.
if you want options, develop a couple different clubs. You're right.
Couldn't agree more. For our more seasoned golfers, or older golfers, however you want to phrase it, and I'm in that group now, I just hit 60 a weekend ago, so I'm now into uh-huh. in the 6-0 club.
You're still way behind.
Yeah. I didn't want to say that, but thank you. You make me feel better now.
Yeah,
but, you know,
okay.
as we get older, you and I have talked about this before on the show, and you've
right.
mentioned this a number of times. But, you know, as we get a little bit older, of course, we're not really looking to make any drastic changes to our game. It's really
right.
becomes all about maintenance, right? So what are the best kicks? What should we be looking at? You know, I mean, we're not going to hit it 300-plus yards anymore. I mean, let's forget it.
No.
Let's be honest. I mean, you know, there's a lot of other factors that play in here. And
that's
obviously
right.
equipment can certainly help a little bit. And obviously your fitness abilities, mm-hmm. Your physical abilities
right.
rather play it. But the truth of the matter, it becomes, as we get older, more about maintaining where we are now. So if you were speaking to a group of you know, more seasoned golfers, we'll put it that way, you know, and
mm-hmm.
and really sort of advising them, this is the approach that really you should take. Forget about trying to, you know, get 20, 30 extra yards. It ain't going to happen in most
right.
cases. What would
That's
your
right.
suggestions be and how you can maintain where you're at now?
Okay. Well, I mean, you mentioned some good things. First of all, you can't sit in your armchair and think you're going to maintain. It's going to go down. You got to be active. You got to do a little bit. This is not talking about going to the gym every day for 2 hours. I mean, you need to do a little bit of stretching, a little flexibility. You know, stay healthy. That's the one thing that we all have. And you know, when you're at, one of the things we talk about very quickly, when you're out playing and anything, make sure you drink plenty of water. Stay hydrated. Your muscles are not going to cramp up and tighten up
right.
because you're dehydrated. So stay healthy. That's the one thing, and stay as much active as you can. I give you the thing that I think comes home to me a lot. And as you know, here recently I've been doing some club fittings and helping some friends out. And I had a gentleman yesterday that was 74 years old. He had a steel shaft, 105 grams stiff shaft. And he wasn't even interested in talking about anything else.
Right.
Because he was not, well, he was not going to admit that he had reached a time in his life where he couldn't swing the club he had always played with. It didn't compute to him. So the one thing I would say to maintain and to be able to hit, because, you know, I think I'm a better than average golfer that played stiff shaft steel for the vast majority of my playing career, that I now have a set of graphite shafted regular flex clubs, because that helps me maintain where I was at. The lighter club head or lighter shaft, a little bit more flex, gives me a little bit more energy in the shaft, so therefore I can offset the lack of club head speed. I can get a little bit more bend in the shaft. Okay? Yeah. So don't be afraid of analyzing your equipment to where you're at now, not to where you were 5 years ago. Okay?
Right.
So as we get older, our equipment needs to match where we're at. Now, you're going to say, well, Clint, that's a lot of money to be spending on new golf equipment when I'm 70 years old. And you're absolutely correct. It's a lot of money. And there's ways that you can have clubs reshafted and different ways of mitigating the overall cost of that. But that's a real key ingredient to be realistic with the type of equipment you're using, okay? And then you can help that. We talked about this years ago about loft angles and things of that nature.
Yep.
And God, at my there's something outside here. The dogs, can you hear that?
That's okay. Yeah, that's okay. Go ahead.
And okay, so that's one thing I would tell people to go and make sure that you can get your equipment to fit where you're at now, not where you think you should be. Be honest with yourself, is that you just can't do that and expect to maintain what you did 10 years ago when you're 10 years older trying to do it with the same equipment. Okay.
Right.
And so, and two, that with drivers and fairway woods, real important to pay attention to the loft angles. You know, when you're really swinging a club, let's say at 90 miles an hour, I mean, you could maybe hit that 10-degree driver, that 9.5 driver. Well, now your club head speed's about 80 miles an hour. You need some loft to get the ball in the air. So don't be afraid to go 12 degrees, 13 degrees with your drivers in order to be able to launch the ball not with speed but with loft angle of the club. Very important idea. Also with your fairway woods. Get rid of the 3-wood, find your 7-wood. Same ideas that now I can't get that 15-degree 3-wood to get high enough in the air. It hits the ground too soon. It won't roll out as far. So now I can then now take maybe a 5-wood or a 7-wood that's got more loft, a little shorter shaft, and then it with the club head speed I have now compared to maybe 10 years ago, I'm still getting that 7-wood to react like my old 3-wood did. I can get the trajectory with loft, not speed. So in my opinion, one of the best things that you could do is to go to your local golf pro and have him evaluate how your clubs are reacting. Are you getting trajectory? You know, and there's so many, you know, the TrackMans and all kind of launch monitors out there that you can get that tells you this. You know, take your 3-wood. What's the launch angle? Well, it's really low, you know, it's 8-9 degree launch angle on my 3-wood. Well, that's too low. So now I need to get something going to launch it maybe 15 to 16 degrees. Well, that may be a 7-wood. Who knows?
Yeah.
So don't be afraid to change your equipment to match up your club speed and your body motion in order to maintain the way you used to hit maybe another club. Replace your 3-wood with a 5-wood. Replace your 5-wood with a 7. You know, the hybrids obviously become quite popular. So now you have a hybrid and, you know, a 5-6, you know, hybrid instead of a 4-5 iron. Okay. So that set makeup and the type of equipment to me is the most realistic and honest way to helping you maintain what you used to do. You know, now obviously we can talk about staying physically fit and things of this nature.
Sure.
But the one thing we can buy better, we can't buy a better body, We can't buy a better, you know, mindset. But in reality, we can change our equipment makeup to not actually do any better, but maybe maintain what we used to do longer.
Yeah, and I think
that makes any sense.
Just to add to, no, it makes perfect sense, and you're exactly right. It's interesting because I had a gentleman that actually reached out to me as, you know, I'm obviously editor of Golf Tips magazine that I own.
Sure.
And,
right.
You know, he was, I believe he said 86, and he's been playing for, you know, 60-odd years, mm-hmm. and he talked about the very same thing. He said, you know, there's nothing really, because I, you know, I asked him, I said, well, what would you like to see in the magazine as far as tips, which would be most interesting? And he came right out and was very blunt about it, and he said, I'd love to learn more about how I can maintain what I've got now. So this is some great tips that you're throwing out here, and I'm going to, you know, talk to the team, and we'll put some things together. Because, you know, you have to really look at your game every season. That doesn't mean you have to go and buy different clubs or reshaft every single season. It's not going to change that rapidly. Hopefully not anyways, unless they're, you know, then you need to go and see your doctor if it is. But, you know, you are going to change as you mature. And there comes a point in time where, you know, if you love this game, the truth of the matter is, let's call, you know, brass tacks, if you will. If you want to become or maintain the level of player that you are right now, then you have to be real. And you have to look at it and say, okay, you know, I'm getting a little bit older. I still want to play. I love this game. If you don't, you know, want to play anymore, then that's a whole different, you know, conversation. But if you want to get out there and still play this game and have enjoyment, then you have to be honest with yourself and get an assessment and look at the equipment. Again, you can't be playing those stiff or extra stiff shafts that you played when you're 20, 30 years old. You've got to upgrade to what's appropriate for your abilities now, you know, 20, 30, 40 years later. And if you're not doing that, then what's ultimately going to happen is that's part of the reason you're not enjoying the game anymore, because you can't hit the clubs as well as you once did. And it's not because your ability stinks or you don't know how to hit the ball. It's because more often than not, it's the equipment has stayed the same, but you've changed. So you have to bring
that's
the equipment and you in alignment with one another. And the only way to do that is really to reach out to your and have that conversation, let them assess you and go through, you know, and again, with, as you said, with the equipment now, it's even easier to do all of that stuff. So, I agree 100%. And you know, I'm in the same boat. Listen, I look, you know, I keep myself in pretty good shape. I do work out and things like that, but I don't go crazy. But at the same time, I know I can't hit it as far as I did when I was in my 20s. You know, I can still hit a good ball and get it out there, but, you know, I've had to look at that as well. And now that I've, you know, hit that 60 mark, I'm going to have to look at it again in this decade to say, okay, you know, where am I going to maintain it? What do I need to do? And obviously being a better short game player is going to help save some of those strokes. But when it comes to the long game, you know, I might have to look at changing the shafts in my clubs, or I have to look at, you know, getting a whole new set, you know, depending on the circumstances. But, you know, you have to look at changing some of the clubs, taking some of the longer clubs out and swapping them out with something that's more appropriate for my abilities at this particular time. And so if we're willing to do it, you know, and we've been in this game for a long time as professionals, the amateurs certainly need to do it as well. And unfortunately, you get, you know, some stubborn, you know, I'll say it, old codgers that don't want to, you know, that want to remember back in the good old days. And the truth of the matter is they're not really enjoying themselves anymore because they're just not able to play, you know, as well. And that's inevitable for all of us, but you can do things to help is what we're trying to say here. And
absolutely. Just a very quick story. The latter parts of my dad's father's life, He was a scratch player, really good golfer for a very long time, and he got to where he didn't want to play. But when I would come home and I would tell him, we'll go play, but you got to do two things. You got to play with the clubs I give you, and we're going to play from the tees I want to play from. He said, okay. So I brought him a set of ladies' clubs and played from the front tees. And he started playing golf again because he said, you know, this is fun again.
Yeah.
So, again, the same thing we're talking about, change of equipment. He would have never bought that set of golf clubs in your entire life. He would have never admitted that he needed to swing a ladies' club, flexibility-wise. And he never would have played from those forward tees. That's the other thing I can tell the listeners. Don't be afraid of moving up a tee box. Okay? You can't hit it as far as you used to. Move up to those senior tees or move up to the next level up and enjoy what you're doing. Don't beat yourself up. You know, I've played the back tees my entire career. I don't play back there anymore. I moved up to the white tees or the middle tees. Have more fun with that. So there's nothing wrong with it.
You know, I just in a quick side note, I played a course not too long ago, and I was looking actually for the back tee, and it was way elevated up behind me. I thought I wasn't even going to climb the stairs to get up there and just to play from there anyway. You know, it was just ridiculous. But, you know, I'm the same as you. I come to the realization, you know, I'm just not going to be, you know, able to play from the set of tees that I used to play from. And you know, I think the sooner you come to that realization, the more fun. It boils down to this. You know, and we joke around about it, but the truth of the matter is we want people to have fun. I've noticed now in the industry what they've started doing is, especially with new golfers coming in, is they're not using things like ladies' tees or whatever. They're using it, you know, forward tees or, you know, just they're color coordinated. So they might say, well, the red tees or something like that. They're doing that in order to really remove the stigma of somebody saying, well, I don't want to play from the ladies' tees or I don't want to play from this. So they're trying to accommodate and really, and I understand that. And, you know, we're all sometimes a little stubborn in our thought, but anyway,
aren't we all,
some great tips as always on the panel. I appreciate you always giving some great advice. I think we covered a lot of different areas tonight and always appreciate your insight into the game and we'll definitely do that again when you're on next time. But, On that note, Clint, let the folks know if they want to reach out. I know you're somewhat officially retired, but you're really not, but maybe someone might have some questions or whatever.
You know, very, very quickly, is I took this advice from my mother. She'll be 95 in April, and she said she would never retire. She just wanted to be able to pick and choose. So I guess that's what I do. I'm not retired. I'm just picking and choosing, which is, a wonderful time right now to be doing that in our industry and our sport, because it's a lot of fun being out there watching the young guys and being able to go do it. But if everyone reach out, it's always ClintGoff001@yahoo.com is the easiest way, and I will respond back if I get an email. And Ted, it's been a great 10 years. We'll do it as long as you can put up with me, and I look forward to next month.
Well, you know, I enjoyed as much as the gang on the show, and it's been a lot of fun. Like I say, it's hard to believe that this has been 12 years that I've actually been doing the shows, about 10 for Coach's Corner, but it's been a lot of fun. And you know what? Yeah. A lot of people, I get a lot of great feedback. People say, you know, I was listening to the show, and I really love that Coach's Corner segment. So you know what? I'm going to keep going with it as long as they keep listening. So. But Clint, as always, have a great weekend, and I look forward to having you back on the panel next month.
All right, take care.
All right,
good night.
Thanks, Clint. All right, that was Clint Wright, 30-plus year member of the PGA of America. He's been a member there for a long time, and as I mentioned in the intro, he's a partner at TGM Golf, and really focuses, as you probably gathered tonight, really focuses on the short game. Certainly works on all aspects of the game throughout his career, but really, as he said, dialed in on the short game. It's an important area. It's an area that gets overlooked, I think, by a lot of golfers. And I think that we need to make sure that we get them improving their game, get them out there having fun. And that's really what it all boils down to. As I mentioned last week, we started a new segment every other Thursday. So the second and the fourth Thursday of each month. We're going to have a special segment that's sponsored by Golf Breaks by PGA Tour is our sponsor for that segment. My good friend Robert Kaufman is joining me as my co-host on that segment, and we're plunking that right in between Coach's Corner and my guest interview, so that'll be coming up next week. We'll have another interesting guest. We kicked it off last week. But if you're interested in booking a trip, we've partnered with Golf Breaks by PGA Tour. If you go to golfbreaks.com and book any trip that you want, whatever is there, and if you enter at checkout promo code GOLFTIPS200, they will give you $200 off your trip. So you're going to get a savings there. There are some conditions that apply, so you'll have to look into that. But you've got a buddy trip that you want to plan for this year, whether you want to go to Myrtle Beach or you want to go to Arizona or wherever, you can go to golfbreaks.com and just book your trip and make sure you use promo code Golf Tips 200, and you'll save yourself a little bit of money on the trip as well. Again, some conditions apply, but we're going to be moving forward with that even more as the season goes on golftipsmag.com. We're going to be posting up here in the next little bit some great spring travel getaways, and you can just book directly online. I'm going to take a quick message, speaking of which, from Golf Tips Magazine, and I'll be right back with my special guest of the evening.
The following ad is sponsored by Golf Tips Magazine.
Are you tired of being short off the tee? And what about those three putts? Forget about it. It's time you got serious about your game. Golf Tips, the most in-depth magazine in the industry. For over 30 years, Golf Tips has delivered expert content such as the latest golf instruction from America's top pros, simple to follow practice and game improvement drills, fitness and mental game tips, equipment, training aids, accessory and apparel reviews, golf destinations and travel tips for every budget, and so much more. Don't miss a single issue. Go to golftipsmag.com and subscribe today.
All right, welcome back, everybody, to Golf Talk Live. Again, I'm your host, Ted Odorico, and we've got a great show. As I said, we just wrapped up the Coach's Corner segment with my good friend Clint Wright, and always enjoy having him on the panel discussion. And he's just been a great professional to have around on the show for many, many years. All right, my special guest this evening is Dr. Jeremy James. He's the founder and chief experience officer for Golf Forever. He has spent over a decade helping professionals and Olympic athletes, Fortune 500 CEOs, and individuals from all walks of life overcome pain and get back to the sports, activities, and daily life that they love. He's teamed up with Justin Leonard and Bill Fabricini to create the most effective golf training program, combining their expertise in golf technique, sports performance, and joint and spine health. Their daily videos series is designed to transform your game by optimizing your body, mind, and movement. And all you need is just access to the internet, connection, and the desire to play. So please welcome my very special guest this evening, Dr. Jeremy James. Jeremy, welcome to Golf Talk Live.
Hey, Ted. I'm happy to be here. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you just fine. Welcome to the show, and thank you for taking time and coming on tonight and speaking with myself and sharing some thoughts about Golf Forever and the fitness side of the game, if you will, with my audience. I really appreciate you taking this time. So
it's my pleasure.
Let's lay it out a little bit so we can get into the conversation. Talk a little bit about Golf Forever. How did it get started? What was sort of the thought process on getting the ball rolling here?
Yeah, so as you mentioned in the intro there, I had a clinic out in Aspen, Colorado for a long time. I was the director of that clinic, and I was also one of the chief clinicians in it. And we, at the time, were really kind of the last resort for people struggling with chronic pain, musculoskeletal pain, usually back pain, but not always. And most of the people that came to see us had already tried everything else, you know, surgery or drugs or physical therapy, what have you. And we took a very different approach. We looked at everything they were doing in their lives on a day-to-day basis that could be contributing to keeping them in a state of pain. So do you exercise or not? If so, what are you doing? Do you play any sports such as golf, skiing, et cetera? You know, how are you spending your day at work? And to make a long story short, we got very good at fixing those people, and we were rebuilding their bodies through exercise and education and counseling. And a lot of our patients were golfers, and that's simply because, you know, the golf swing isn't a natural movement for the human body. And you really do need to, most people, you know, need to be pretty proactive in how they train their body to make sure that that swing doesn't break them down, especially if that's, you know, one of the main or only physical activities they do. So, you know, what we were doing was mostly education, and it was quite expensive to come see us. We were in an expensive location, and insurance didn't typically cover what we did because we were mostly in the gym with these people. And so the idea was, you know, how do we get this information out there so that everybody can utilize it and help overcome pain, get better at golf? And I should mention, probably the thing your listeners would be most interested in is what we saw in the clinic is, yeah, we were really good at getting golfers out of pain, but what they were most excited about almost always was that their golf games would improve, because the strategies to get better at golf are very similar to the strategies to get out of pain. You're trying to build core strength, hip flexibility, shoulder flexibility and mobility, and all that sort of thing. So pleasant side effect was that they got quite a bit better at golf.
Yeah, and you know, we were just talking on the earlier segment, you know, obviously as golfers, I just turned 60 actually about a week ago. So I'm now in that 60s decade, and, you know, obviously you have to take care of yourself, and there's a lot of different things that go with it. It's not just the physical, but obviously what you eat and how you exercise and that sort of thing. So there's a lot of factors. We'll get into some of that as we go along a little bit more. You can explain some more and more details, certain things. But,
sure.
You know, ultimately you have to really sort of, especially in golf, because your body's changing over the decades, you have to sort of continually kind of reassess where you're at and make adjustments accordingly. So that's something, unfortunately, a lot of men, I think, fall into that category of, well, I don't really want to change. And, you know, I want to play like I did when I was in 20, and it's not going to happen. And I know you could probably share a thousand stories. And we'll talk about some stuff in a moment. But I want to go on, because I mentioned him in the intro there. Justin Leonard, of course, was a PGA member for many, many years and very well known and very well liked in the golfing industry. How did he become involved with Golf Forever?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that. Justin was a local in Aspen, Colorado, where I lived. It was a small community at the time. And so everybody, you know, small town, everybody knows everybody. And I approached him with the concept before, you know, there was even a product. And he just loved the idea from the get-go. He's very proactive about taking care of his own body. He's a very active guy. You know, he skis, bikes, plays golf, obviously, hikes, hits the gym regularly. And, you know, he and I are both getting up there in age like you. And he just bought in immediately. And I can't thank him enough for taking the risk and taking the leap of faith to, you know, allow us to have him involved. And he, you know, he put his reputation on the line for something that was really a new idea, and really, you know, just an idea at that time. So that's how we got started with him, pitched him the idea. And then he was like, absolutely want to be a part of this, want to do it. I believe in it. And we took it from there.
You know, and just to people understand, you know, from a golf professional standpoint, you know, guys like Justin and many of the others, they get approached all the time about things like this, and not just, I'm not talking your product, but just always, you know, somebody wanting to have an idea. So for him to commit obviously says a lot, that there was a lot of process and a lot of thought that went into what you were doing, that obviously he understood in God, and somebody that takes good care of himself and believes in, and you know, and understands the importance of staying fit, you know, if you want to play at a high level, particularly in this game, really at any level, but particularly at a higher level, you know, you've got to take care of yourself, and there's certain things that you have to do. So that really is a testament to you guys at Golf Forever to be able to do that, because, as I said, these guys get approached all the time to, you know, whether it's endorsing or whether it's to recommend or what have you, different things. So for him to get more involved and really sort of dig in right from the get-go, again, is a testament to what it is that you're doing. So, you know, kudos to you and the rest of the Golf Forever team to have him involved. And he's a great guy. I couldn't think of a better person to really be involved.
Yeah.
Now we touched on real quick, or you'd mentioned about, you know, going to the gym and things like that. So, you know, I do, and many others there, we like to hit the gym and get out there and do that. But there's differences in sort of traditional workouts and golf-specific exercises. Talk about the differences, because, you know, people just, well, if I go and lift weights or if I go and hop on the treadmill and think that's going to be great. And I'm not saying it's not going to help, but there are golf specific exercises, because again, the golf swing is not, as you pointed out, is not a natural body movement. So give us kind of a lowdown, if you will, with some of the differences between the two.
Sure. It's a great question. And I'll say you made a very intuitive statement earlier when you said, you know, I'm 60 and your body changes as you get older and you need different approaches. You need to mix things up. And that applies to what you just asked me. And I'll also mention, I'd be amiss if I didn't, that, you know, Scottie Scheffler joined the team for the same reason. He was actually using the Golf Forever swing trainer before he became part of our company and did it for that reason. to your point about, you know, they get approached all the time. He did it because he believed in it, and he's been doing this stuff. He's been working with one of our Golf Forever's top trainers, Dr. Troy Van Beezen, his whole career. And so I'll use that as a segue because, yes, golf is specific, and you need a specific workout for golf, and you also need a specific workout for golf for your age and for your physical abilities. All these things are very, very important. And you know, one thing that's really common in golfers across all ages is that they develop some asymmetries in their body, especially if golf is the main thing that they do. You'll see pretty dramatic differences in muscle tone and muscle length and tightness one side of the body versus the other just because of that repetitive, you know, high velocity movement. And so your training program has to work to address things like that. You couple that with how most, you know, American adults spend their day, which is in a seated position. And it can really cause problems and also dramatically impact your golf game. If we just take the example of sitting, you know, with the golf swing, you really need to be able to use the muscles in your backside and your buttocks, the gluteal muscles and others, to generate power from the ground up. And if you sit on your butt all day, that becomes very difficult to do. Those muscles become disengaged neurologically. You almost, there's a term called gluteal amnesia, which is a funny term. I didn't come up with it, but essentially your brain forgets how to use those muscles unless you retrain it. And so, you know, that's part of it. And if you just go in, and I could talk about this topic all day, so I'll try to keep it brief, but let me know if you want to dig in further. But if you just take an example of an exercise that a lot of people are familiar with, the bench press, you know, a lot of men will go and spend a lot of time trying to get their weight up on a bench press. And that can actually be, for golf, counterproductive because it's counterproductive and inefficient because you should be spending your time doing other things. You know, in a golf swing, you're not laying on your back, you know, against something solid and trying to push something up over your chest. And so training in those patterns doesn't apply to golf. And if you're doing a lot of weight in an exercise like that, as an example of bicep curls, you can actually cause your shoulder range of motion to decrease over time if you're getting very bulky, for example, in a particular area. The other thing that that particular exercise, as an example, doesn't do is you're not challenging your balance at all. You're not challenging your coordination, your rotational ability, because you're just laying against that hard surface. And so you can be really inefficient by doing different things and still get a great workout, but one that hits all the points that are important to golf. If you just take that bench press, put a person on their feet instead of laying down on the ground or a bench, and then you give them an asymmetrical load. So something we do with the swing trainer, it's a bar. If you press that out in front of you and it's only anchored on one side and the anchor's behind you, now you're working on your arms, but you're also challenging your balance. You're challenging your core's ability to resist rotational force, which creates rotational power. You're challenging your coordination. All that stuff plays into the golf game. And the last point is just the age-specific part. You're not going to do the same things with a Scottie Scheffler as you would with a Justin Leonard or as you would with a senior golfer. They're going to be different things because your body changes as you age and it has different needs. And also the degree of safety, you know, changes. You're going to be comfortable putting a Scottie Scheffler into more ballistic, potentially risky moves and loads than you would with a senior golfer. And so that's really what we did well at my clinic, and that's what the Golf Forever program does. When you join, you do an assessment that gets all of this information so that it can provide you with a routine that's safe and effective exactly for who you are and, you know, where you are in life.
Yeah, and that's why it's so important, I think, you know, as a golf professional. I mean, obviously, I'm not trained as a certified golf fitness instructor, but I have connections that I can, you know, guide them to. So I obviously try to make sure that anybody I'm working with, you know, that we put them in touch with that and say, let's get an assessment physically. You know, we can talk about the clubs and we can talk about the golf swing, but, you know, you need to understand where you are physically. And I think, and you would assume would probably agree with this, but I think, unfortunately, and I'm going to throw the men under the bus here because I think women is a whole different category when it comes to that. But typically the men are more concerned about, well, let me get stronger and that's going to help, but they're not really focusing on the flexibility. And that's really where you get the power. I mean, yeah, you have to have strength and you've got to, you know, be able to create that torque. But at the same time, if your flexibility, because you've been bulking up, as you said, you know, with your upper body and that, and but you don't have the flexibility, well, instead of getting that nice shoulder turn into the backswing, you're now cut off a little bit because you can't actually load up the way you should. So your backswing shortens.
That's right.
You're not getting the power and the transfer through. So they're, and this is leading me into this question here, is when did you sort of have that aha moment when you realized that your Golf Forever's exercise instruction program was on the right track? When did you sort of have that moment, say, you know what, I think we've really hit the mark here, and I think this is going to help a lot of golfers of all levels?
Well, thank you. I think to answer your question first, an analogy that everyone listening can relate to that you just described is, think about if you have a rubber band and you pull that rubber band apart, like say 2 inches, and you let it snap. And then think about that same rubber band, say you pull it apart 6-7 inches with a bigger range of motion and that cold energy that creates, and then let it snap. It's far more rebound, far more force is produced. It's the same with your body. The more range of motion you have, the more coiled energy you create, and the more of that energy is transferred as you swing the golf club, if that makes sense. So I knew we were on to this. My only concern when doing this was, can we get those same results via video and digital that we got in our clinic? That was my number one concern and the thing that, you know, I was most eager to look at the data and prove out. And it turned out like that was one of the easiest things. We had so much experience and data from both my clinic and the other medical specialists on our team. One of them is Dr. Todd Albert out of the Hospital for Special Surgery. He's the chief surgeon emeritus there. He's our medical director. We had so much one-on-one interaction and so many hours, thousands and thousands of hours logged with patients, that we put that into both the algorithm that serves you the content and in the videos themselves to, you know, we know when a particular move or exercise has the potential to be done the wrong way or has the potential to hurt you if you don't do it the right way. And so we speak to that in the videos. So to answer your question, pretty quickly, after we got a couple of hundred people using this thing, you know, several years ago, and we saw the results that they were getting, we knew we were on to something. And then the biggest challenge was trying to convince a sometimes skeptical audience, and this has obviously changed a lot in the last few years, but, you know, a skeptical audience that they needed to work on their body as much as they need to put as much time to it as they do, you know, hitting balls in the range. So getting that across and trying to change that mindset was actually a bigger challenge than making the effective product.
Right. And I think, you know, with the onset, you know, in his earlier days, when Tiger came out on tour, you know, he really changed the game in a lot of ways. It wasn't just the fact that he was winning tournaments and, you know, hitting great shots and that, but he actually, you know, when he first came out, he was, you know, pretty skinny and not a lot of meat on the bones, as they say. Mm-hmm. But he very quickly adapted into, you know, a workout regimen that obviously got him in good shape. And the tour followed him. I mean, a lot of these, especially these young guns that came out, started realizing, hey, if we're going to compete with this guy, we've got to start hitting the gym and we've got to start working on programs. So, of course, all the trainers and the golf fitness professionals, you know, sort of rose out of that more. And not that there weren't any before, but they really sort of started coming out. Now, of course, you go to a tour event, whether it's PGA or LPGA, and they've got trailers there now that they can go and work out, and they've got fitness professionals there that they can have right on hand. You know, they recognized the importance at that point, especially because let's be honest, when you go back, you know, 20 or so years on tour, and I'm trying to be mean when I say this, but the guys were not in the best of shape. I mean, they were in good shape, but, you know, they were a little flabby, let's be honest, compared to what some of these young guys are today. And, you know, they still play a great game and they won tournaments, but the game has elevated to a different level. It's become much more athletic. So What was the most challenging part, do you think, of developing Golf Forever? What was, I mean, obviously you've talked about some of the components, and I'm purposely, before you answer that, I'm purposely not doing the website until later in the broadcast when we get towards the end, because I don't want people running off and flip. I want them to listen to this conversation first, and then we're going to give them that information, and then I want them to go and investigate for themselves. So that's why we're not giving that information out. Not that I don't want to promote it or anything like that. I just want people to really hear what you're saying so they have a better understanding before they go and investigate and look into the different things that are available. So what was the most challenging part when you were developing this?
Well, I think really it was what I just described. Trying to convince the everyday golfer who's, you know, probably working their tails off, you know, Monday through Friday, the weekend comes and they just want to go out and enjoy golf, and they may not, you know, really have the time or energy or desire to train their body or to do something that's perceived as, you know, working out. So overcoming that and educating people was the biggest challenge, and it's still a challenge. I mean, we've come a long way, and we tell our golfers, you know, you got to think of yourself as an athlete, just like any other person that plays an athletic sport. Think about just warming up your body, if nothing else. It'd be really hard for you to go out and look and find anybody that's playing basketball, football, baseball, track, you name it, and they're not doing some sort of warm-up for their body. And yet, you know, a lot of golfers don't. They just go and hit balls just by warming up your body for 5-10 minutes before you play can have profound impacts on your game, on how you play that day. And then putting in a little bit of work, training your body, building some muscle tone and strength in the right places, increasing your flexibility in the right spots. This isn't, you know, like high intensity, you know, super cardio-based workouts that we provide. I mean, we have some of that if people let us know that they want it in the assessment, but basically, it's about, you know, 20, 30 minutes a couple of times a week of just this very focused, specific exercise for golf. And, you know, we're not screaming at you. We're not trying to do a boot camp style workout. We're trying to be very thoughtful and efficient. You know, we're trying to do to give you the most you can take away in the shortest amount of time. But, yeah, just re-educating the golf population and letting them know that. And to your point, it's not the primary focus is golf improvement and getting out of pain or avoiding injury, but the secondary huge benefit, as you mentioned, is you just feel better. And, you know, when you get in your 50s and beyond or 40s and often 30s, if you're not proactive, your body just starts to decline. That's what the cells in your body are signaled to do in your 30s is start to decline. And if you don't proactively work against that, your life can take a dramatically different path at 60. You can either stay pretty vibrant and healthy and feeling good for a long time, 20, 30 years after that, or you can really go downhill quickly. And exercise and the right exercise plays a huge role in the trajectory that you take.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more, Jeremy. This is something that you have to, you know, as I said, I just recently turned 60, and you know, one thing I didn't want, you know, and again, you know, times are much different now, but I can remember looking back to, you know, when my parents were, you know, younger and that they were, you know, pretty vibrant, pretty healthy. But as they started to age, because that generation was, you know, it was more like you work at so many years, you retire and you sort of, you know, enjoy your retirement. And, you know, physical fitness was not, and I don't mean they didn't take care of themselves, but it wasn't as in the forefront now. But people are realizing, hey, you know, we're living longer typically now. You know, men are living into their 80s and beyond. And, you know, they're thinking about, it's not just the golf game, they're thinking about quality of life. And there's things that you have, obviously, what we eat and keeping hydrated and all other things. The nutritional side is just as important as the physical side. And so, you know, it's not just about, you know, workouts and things. It's also about, you know, what we're feeding our body and making sure we're getting good energy and not just, you know, sugars and fats and things like that that are going to bog us down. Is this a program that you, and I throw that in because I think it's important you know, we can talk about a lot of different things and about the physical side, and that is extremely important. But you know, you can't be eating a bunch of crap and then, you know, think you're hitting the gym or doing your program here and think that you're going to get great results. You're certainly going to get results, but you're going to get better results if it's a part and parcel. Is this something? Is
That's
this a
right.
program that really can be for anybody? What percentage do you think of golfers would you say could benefit from this program? Is this 100% hands down, or are there some situations where maybe it may be more challenging for certain demographics or what have you? Give me your thoughts here.
Sure. So Golf Forever, as it stands today, will work for anyone that's not a junior. And I'll get to juniors in just a second because we have something coming for that. But essentially, anybody that's, you know, roughly 18 years old and up, and especially, you know, adults from the 30s onward, for all of those people, and I say that because of that customization I referred to with the assessment, you answer some questions. We ask you to actually go through some moves and exercises and give us information back after you do those. Okay, how did that feel? How long were you able to hold this? Could you get in that position? Did that hurt? Did this hurt? Et cetera. And so the content and the program that you're provided based on all that stuff is going to be specific to whoever you are and whatever age you are. And as I mentioned earlier, the needs are different, and we address that with the program that you get. Just one little, I think, easy to remember takeaway for your audience, and I'm glad you brought up the nutrition piece, is it doesn't have to be that complicated. And nutrition is a very complicated subject, but if you just want to try to follow some simple rules that'll have a dramatic impact on your health, it's just, you know, try not to eat a lot of stuff out of packages or boxes. Try to eat real foods.
Right.
Try not to, as you mentioned, eat a lot of sugar. Try to eat a lot of colors. There's a lot of different nutrients and different colored fruits and vegetables. You know, drink light beer rather than the heavy stuff, especially after 30.
Right.
The abdominal fat, specifically, just losing a few pounds of abdominal fat takes a highly disproportionate amount of load off of your spine, as an example.
Mm-hmm.
And little changes, you know, you lose 2, 3, 4 pounds in your abdomen, it can do wonders for your back and for your, you know, your golf swing as well. You're going to have more range of motion where you need it. So with the nutrition, just keep it simple. Get good proteins. Don't eat a lot of junk, as you said. It's not that hard, and it's pretty easy to follow once you get used to it.
Yeah, and I think, again, you know, there's a lot of great options out there, and I think it's like anything. You need to really speak to somebody that's experienced, you know, a good nutritionalist, and get them to, you know, mm-hmm. if they understand what it is, the type of lifestyle that you're wanting to get to, if you will, they can tailor. And, you know, everybody's under the, and I don't want to go down a whole diatribe with nutrition, but, you know, I think a lot of it is people, when they hear that, well, I've got to do this, I got to do that, they think you're going on some crazy diet, and that's not what we're talking about at all. We're talking about feeding your body good food that's going to give you good energy and hydrated. And people think, well, if I just drink a lot of, you know, tea or this, that, and that's not the same thing, or coffee, you know, as long as I'm getting liquids. Well, no, that's not right. I mean, there's a lot of things, and that's a whole different topic for a different discussion. But so you've obviously gotten a lot of feedback from, you know, golfers that have benefited from what you guys are doing. Give us some of the most gratifying feedback that you've heard so far.
I say this with all humility, and I'm not trying to be braggadocious here, but we get so much now, and every single one of them still means as much. And I invite, when we talk about how you find this later, I invite people to look at our reviews on the App Store, for example. There's thousands of them. We have a 4.9 out of 5-star rating with thousands of reviews. And if you just read through those, yes, every one of them is mentioning the benefits to their golf game, but almost every one of those as well is mentioning how much better they feel, how much more energy they have, how they're able to do things that they thought they couldn't do anymore other than golf. And to me, that's the most, for me personally, that's the most gratifying, because I saw this and still see it. And, you know, I'm not sure everybody on our team would agree with me, because we have some real passionate people about golf. But for me personally, I see this as a bit of a Trojan horse. we're using golf as a motivating factor to get people
right.
to take care of their bodies, right? So this is a way.
Yep.
One of my dreams when I was in practice was, and it's a dream of a lot of practitioners, is how do you effectively make preventative care work? How do you make it sexy and
yep.
attractive and get people interested? It's really hard to do. And this was one way that I found to do just that. So when we get these feedback from these people, I mean, it's some unbelievable stuff. Like we were at the PGA show in January. And we have this gentleman sent us a video, which is just amazing. You know, he had a serious cancer diagnosis, went through a really rough go of treatment. Mm-hmm. He said, he came up to me at the PGA show and he said, "Doc, I'm not exaggerating when I say this, golf forever kept me alive. It kept me feeling good. It kept me going. I did it when I was in the hospital getting chemo." He actually says much more dramatic things than I just mentioned, and we have that testimony on our site. But it's things like that. It's people really, and to your point about nutrition, it's people not realizing how much better they can feel, especially, you know, if they're 50, 60, 70s, and 80s. They just become kind of resigned to, okay, well, this is life now. I'm not going to feel good. I'm not going to move well. I can't do
right.
things that I used to do. And that's not true. It is absolutely
right.
not true. You have a huge amount of control over how you're
yep.
going to feel and move and how long you're going to live and what your life's going to be like. And those types of testimonials and feedback that we get are the most rewarding to me.
Well, Jeremy, you said something a few minutes ago that really sends this message home, and that is preventative. You know, unfortunately
mm-hmm.
for many decades, it's been reactive. You know, people, they get sick
mm-hmm.
or they get in poor shape. And now all of a sudden, well, it's like, you know, I wish I had have done this when I was younger. I wish I had have done that. The advancements of not just technology, but the ability of, you know, with the internet, and I know you got to be careful and that, but there is so much information and good information. I mean, you got to, you know, watch and be careful, but there's a lot of good information out that's being put out there by, you know, great practitioners like yourself, who are saying, hey, if you do this, this, and this now, when it gets time, you're getting a little bit older, you're going to prevent. That doesn't mean that, you know, you're curing cancer or that you're doing anything. I'm not suggesting that.
Right.
But the more that you prevent that's going to help with injuries, right? I mean, again, we all can
Absolutely.
Get injuries. Even some of the best players out on tour, you know, have wrist injuries and you know, ACL and all this other stuff, but they're also doing preventative stuff, and it could be a lot more serious if they didn't do something to help prevent that. And that's really what you guys are doing too. It's not just about maintaining and keeping in shape and think, it's about preventing future things that can come up as we age. And that's important. I want to touch on just a little bit, if you could talk about, and I know you did mention some specific differences in that, but the exercises that Golf Forever, that you're doing with some of the tour pros like Scotty, you know, Scheffler and Ryan Palmer, Zach Johnson, and of course, Justin Leonard, what is it that they're doing? Obviously, again, they're each different age groups and things, but what is some of the things that a tour player is going to do maybe with the exercise as opposed to maybe, you know, some of the other guys out there? That's helping them to not only get stronger, but obviously hitting the ball further, which is every golfer's dream. So what do you say to that?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think a way to simplify it, to just give you an easy-to-digest answer, is usually the difference between what a Scottie Scheffler is doing and what, say, your weekend warrior senior golfer is doing is the degree of intensity, the degree of resistance, and the degree of speed. So some of the movement patterns will be very similar. Some of the exercises will be different variations of each other, where you're just tweaking, you're adjusting the dials on the intensity, the agility required, the amount of balance required, the speed at which you're doing, how much load you're adding. Those are the real differences. Now, you know, also, so we'll say, you know, 75% overlap between a younger and older person, but with those differences of degrees I just mentioned. And then the other 25% will be specific things that we'll target. You know, somebody in their 70s tends to have significantly lost range of motion in their upper back and their shoulders. We get that slouched forward posture from being on devices and computers. So we'll spend more time on that, and we'll focus on that in different ways than we would, you know, with a Scotty or a younger person who hasn't developed those postural changes yet. And those, there's, you know, several examples just through that lens of what would be different. But, you know, Scotty and Tom Kim and the others on the team that are young and in great physical shape, they're using Golf Forever to try to boost their rotational power. There's the ways in which we use the Swing Trainer, for example, which is our physical product with Scotty, and that's something Scotty uses every day. He uses it on tour to warm up. It's challenging his core and his hips in a very specific way that's extremely difficult to replicate without that piece of equipment. And he's doing that to make sure when he plays day in and day out, especially there's a lot of travel involved, and, you know, sitting on a plane or sitting in a car shuts down your hips. It starts to limit blood flow to the muscles in your hips and shoulders. And you've got to work hard to address that and to constantly get that stuff moving in an optimal way again every time, you know, you get out there and play. And so that's what Scotty and the other tour players do. They use it to warm up, and then they also use it to tweak their strength in rotational power ways to you know, the finest point that they can get it.
And also, too, I think, you know, many of your users of Golf Forever have been able to identify specific common pains that maybe they've had in their bodies. You know, typically, obviously, in golf, you're dealing with, you know, hip issues, lower back pain, that sort of thing. What advice would you give that maybe, you know, that could help, you know, people that are maybe, you know, struggling with that? And let me just say this, sort of throw a disclaimer out there. I mean, I know you're obviously qualified, and that's not the issue, but I just want to make sure that if anybody listening out there, obviously we want you to consult with your, you know, local physician before you, you know, do anything and that. So this is really just more for information and things for you to consider and certainly discuss with your healthcare provider. But, you know, obviously there's some issues that people are dealing with. What are some of the things that you guys have been able to identify through your program?
Well, you know, it's a lot of common things that almost all of these things fit inside the bell curve, and you'll see some weird little outliers here and there. And I do want to stress, you said it just perfectly, and we say it right when you are thinking about joining Golf Forever. If you have pain or discomfort, you need to see a physician first just to make sure it's not one of the more rare, you know, serious things that could be a signal of something serious going on. That said, the vast majority, and I mean vast majority, of aches and pains that people get, young and old, are muscular in nature, by far. And so, you know, the disc herniations and the nerve pain, those are pretty rare in the grand scheme of things. And so with muscular pain, it's almost always a muscle's not working as they're supposed to, whether that's because they were injured in the past or they just don't have the base level of strength. And what happens when that occurs is other muscles that work to move that same joint or joints that the injured muscles do are asked to pick up the load and to do more work than they're built to do. And those muscles become very painful. And that is almost always what is going on, especially if you go to the physician can't find anything. And, you know, they're just like, well, this is just part of getting old. We've ruled out infection, a fracture, or cancer, or anything like that. It's just muscles not being healthy, and it doesn't take much at all to address that stuff. You just need the right guidance, because the trick here, and what we got so good at in my practice and what I think Golf Forever does well, is that unless you pay attention, and if you've developed some bad movement patterns, some compensatory patterns, for example, with golf, your body's become asymmetrical. Some muscles are degenerated, some are overworked. If you've developed that and you go to do an exercise program, you're going to do those same, you're going to do those exercises with the same bad movement patterns or compensatory patterns that got you here in the first place. And essentially you're just going to make yourself worse, you know, and that happens all the time. So it's kind of like, to walk again sometimes for some people, you have to think about it as like post-surgical rehab, really, because you have to pay attention. You have to have the right instructions. You have to listen, and you have to go, okay, this probably isn't going to be what I automatically do if somebody just asks me to move. I've got to think about how to move this differently. I've got to turn these muscles on and use them properly with the proper form. And I think this has changed a lot, but you know, even 10 years ago, we would see lots of professional athletes that we had to regress way back to doing things on their hands and knees to just practice squatting, for example. There was a very well-known NBA center I'm thinking of, and I won't mention his name, but, you know, he's taken rebounds, and every time he comes back and hits the floor after a rebound, his knees are buckling inward, essentially, because he wasn't doing a good squat pattern. And over time, you know, that stresses the knees, it stresses the muscles and the hips out. And so, you know, for 2 weeks, we had that person just doing really basic movements with his legs often on the ground. And he was pretty incredulous, you know, at first. He's like, I'm a high-end athlete. What are you doing? You know, I want to be throwing the kettlebell around. And we said, no, you know, you're throwing that kettlebell around in a bad way. You're not moving how you're supposed to be moving. And, you know, sure enough, addressing those things has an immediate impact on athletic performance, such as golf, and on, you know, pain and stiffness and injury. So I hope that made sense and answered your question.
Yeah, it made perfect sense. And again, especially for those that are playing at a more athletic level, some of the ones that we mentioned that are on tour, you know, they need to really make sure that they're doing things properly, because it's going to affect their livelihood. That's how they're making money, is out on tour, winning tournaments and playing in events. And if they're doing things incorrectly, that's affecting their performance, then, you know, they're not going to be near the top of the money list. They're going to need to be near the bottom, and that doesn't serve them well. Just a couple of more things, because we're getting close to our time. You have some, obviously, many trainers and instructors that are now affiliated with Golf Forever. What does it take from them to get involved if somebody's interested and they want to get involved as a trainer or instructor?
It's pretty rigorous. I'm not gonna lie. We have a lot of people that want to join, and you know, we're willing to often, if somebody has the right attitude and the openness and the, you know, kind of the core essential skills, we'll shape and help them, you know, develop their skills better. But often we just want the best of the best that have a high degree of experience across a very wide population size. So, of course, we have a lot of trainers. Most of our trainers have worked with professional athletes of all different types and golfers.
Sure.
But we want our trainers to have a wealth of knowledge across all populations, and importantly, to make sure they follow my personal motto and the motto of all medical practitioners out there, which is do no harm first. Number one is safety. We are always considering the degree of risk that any exercise has, and every exercise has some degree of risk associated with it for that particular individual. And we are always striving to reduce the degree of risk as much as possible while still keeping it as efficient and effective as possible. So we invite anybody that's interested to reach out to us. You can find an info on our website, but it is a rigorous process. We interview them. We have them submit multiple workouts in advance, and we critique those, and it's a multi-stage vetting process.
Yeah, and you know what? If you want it to be successful and you want – I mean, because it's very easy, unfortunately, a lot of people out there say, well, yeah, the more the merrier. But the truth is you want to make sure, because it's not just a matter about brand identification. You want to make sure that the people that you're putting out there – as representing your organization in a professional way, is doing so with a consistency, but also a certain professionalism, because otherwise it comes back and you don't want people to be hurt or injured or things like that. Very quickly, is there an end to this Golf Forever system, or is there also a type of maintenance program? We hear that word often thrown around as well in golf. You know, I'm at the age now where it's not about advancing so much my game, but maintaining where I'm at. Is that also something in the Golf Forever system that there's they can sort of migrate into a maintenance program?
Yeah, it is. And great question. Thanks for asking. So essentially, when you use Golf Forever, it makes micro adjustments as time goes on. So we have thousands of users who have been at this for years on our program. And as they age and as they change and as it's, for example, if it's in-season versus off-season, the algorithm and the programming is going to adjust to that. So we're going to tweak, we're going to challenge, for example, your balance in different ways 6 months out or a year out in the program than we did your first few weeks. It's constantly responding to what that user is telling us and where that user is in their fitness journey and where they are in their age. And, you know, I mentioned earlier, but, you know, most of our users are doing this 2 to 3 times a week, which is really the minimum effective dose is 2 times per week to see pretty substantial gains. And, you know, a lot of people would think of that as maintenance. And if you want to go much harder, you know, you want to do 5, 6 days a week, the program will adjust to that as well. But most of our users are doing, you know, 2 to 3 times a week. It's about 40 minutes all in each session. And that, you know, that I wouldn't call that maintenance because you actually are, you know, constantly fighting against that decay that happens naturally. So it's more than maintenance,
right?
You know, it's keeping you at a minimum. It's keeping you at the state you're at now, but far more often it's keeping you getting better and better and better in different ways that you wouldn't otherwise if you were just kind of hitting the gym and doing some bicep curls or, you know, doing some bench presses.
Well said. And what are some of the future goals for Golf Forever? What do you see happening down the road?
Well, the one that I'm most excited about right now and the one that I personally have been spearheading in our company is our new Golf Forever certification program. And so essentially what we're doing is this is a response to a demand that we have from golf coaches out there. And they wanted to understand how they wanted a better understanding of when there was a limitation in their student's body that was preventing them from achieving the outcomes that they want. And so, you know, there's a lot of great certifications out there right now. Ours is very different in that our strategy here is we're going to teach coaches the bare minimum they need to know to be able to recognize, okay, the student has a limitation in, for example, their shoulder turn, and that's because their shoulder doesn't have proper range of motion. And then importantly, we're not going to teach the coach how to try to fix that. We're not going to say, okay, we're going to teach you how to put together a rehabilitative exercise program. We do that for them. The Golf Forever program does that for their students. Our certification is just showing them enough so that they can understand that's going on. And then we give them a tool, which is part of our app, so that they can introduce drills into their lessons that will help their students feel things that the coach wants them to feel. Okay, I really want you to make this move, and I want you to feel the muscles right here engaging. We provide those tools for them through this certification, and so I think it's going to really help us spread the message through the coaches that athleticism is important and that you really can change your body in a pretty short amount of time with not nearly the effort that most people would think it takes. And that's, we're launching that. Our target is April 15th to the golf coach community. That will be covered in their continuing education credits. It'll be, you know, official part of that. And I think it's going to make a big impact on golfers. I'm really excited about it. And the coaches that we've been working with so far and testing this on are so excited. The feedback has been so overwhelmingly positive. This is something that they really wanted, and they just didn't. They're busy. You know, they don't want a real complicated new set of information to try to learn. They don't want to learn to become a physical therapist. Just give me the bare minimum I need to know, and then give me a tool that can address this stuff, and don't put a lot more on my plate. And those are the kind of the big driving ideas behind this thing.
That's fantastic. And I think it's so important. And you're exactly right. You hit it on the head. You know, the industry is changing. You know, golf professionals, both on the tour and the teaching side of the game, have recognized now, as I mentioned, it really sort of took root, if you will, when Tiger came out on tour, was when you really started to notice a change in the industry. And people recognize that you've got to, you know, it's more than just being in shape. You've got to be proactive and you've got to be out there if mm-hmm. you want to be competitive on tour. Or if you want to just, you know, if you're a more seasoned, and I'm referring to age now, golfer, and you want to get out there and continue to have fun, well, you can't just sit mm-hmm. in the armchair at home and, you know, go out and play on the weekend and expect to, you know, play your best if you're not feeling your best. So, again, it's not about going through some power lifting or some, you know, major overhaul. It's about incorporating it into your lifestyle. And it can be done, as you said, as little as a couple of times a week for, you know, 20, 30 minutes each session, just to, you know, and this is something you can do, really, I think you would agree, in addition to maybe a regular workout. You might want to modify some things, but, you know, it can be done. So it's not like you have to just throw everything to the towel and you know, jump in head first. But, you know, these are things that you can incorporate into your physical routine each week that's going to benefit you. And as you said, there's millions of golfers out there that want to, you know, have a better game. And this is really a good way to do it. Stop, you know, spending $500 on a new driver. That's not going to really do anything for you if you're out of shape. So I think it's great, great advice. Well, you know, I'll be the first to say it in the industry. I mean, I love seeing the new equipment. You know, I was at the PGA show this year as well. And, you know, the last several years and, you know, I see all kinds of new stuff and gadgets coming out there, and it's very interesting. But the truth of the matter is, you know, there's a lot of factors that go into the effectiveness of those products. And this is one of them, being in you know, better shape and having more energy and things like that that we talked about tonight. All right, so let's get to the good part, and that is to let the folks know where can they go to get more information and what's the next step for them.
Well, thank you. You can go to golfforever.com. It's our website. There'll be places on there where you can learn more. You can get into the Golf Forever experience in a couple of different ways, depending on what you're looking to do right now. You can also directly download our application at the Apple Store. Just search Golf Forever in the App Store, and you'll see those thousands of very positive reviews that can kind of give you a sense of what you're going to expect. And if you buy our swing trainer, essentially we'll ship that to you, and when it gets there, you'll start the program with that piece of equipment into the content that's provided to you. But if you don't want to do that and you just want to give it a try without purchasing something, you can try it for free in the application for 30 days, and the application will adjust to whatever equipment you have, either in your home or gym, and it will just give you content with whatever's available to you. And I wanted to mention one more thing for your listeners. This is something that I found a lot of people don't really know, and so it's just an important takeaway here, is that cardiovascular exercise and resistance training are very different, and they're both mm-hmm. important. And I want your listeners to think out of it like this. Cardiovascular exercise will get you a long life in most cases, right? It prevents heart attacks, helps with diabetes, things like that. But resistance training, so that's, you know, strength training with some sort of a resistance, will make that long life worth living. That's what gives you function. That's what prevents aches and pains. That's what keeps you out there doing what you want to do. You have to have resistance training. You can't get away and expect to have a great life if you're just committed to, you know, riding the bike or walking or jogging. You got to bring in that resistance training too to get the real benefits and to start to feel better, move better, play better golf.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And it's really about finding that right balance. And you guys do a great job of that. And there's lots of information on the website. Again, go to golfforever.com. You can purchase the swing trainer right there, and you can go and there's links there to download the app and get started today. It's well worth it. It's a great program and a lot of good information. And if you want to play better golf, I mean, I'm the first that we talked about this in my earlier segment with my good friend Clint. You know, we talked about that, getting yourself in good shape in that. And especially as we get older, you know, we start to lose things like muscle mass, and we start to lose, you know, flexibility and things like that. But you don't have to just all of a sudden just, you know, like a pool of water just melt onto the floor. You can get out there and do things to keep and certainly prolong. Well, you know what I'm talking about. You know better than I do.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have to get out there and you have to be proactive. And it's preventative maintenance. I mean, if you want to be better, feel better about, you know, as you progress through life, you have to be proactive. And you can't just wait for things to happen and say, well, now I better do something now. And that's not to say that you can't get better. But you need to be proactive. So this is a great way to do it. So go to golfforever.com. Check out that. There's obviously in the App Store, you're going to see some great reviews there. But you're also going to see some great reviews on the website as well. Some videos there. Check them out. Learn a little bit more about it. But I tell you, it's money well spent. And you can order right through the website. Jeremy, thank you very, very much for coming on tonight. I really appreciate it. And just sharing some great information. I imagine if they want to reach out to you as well, they can contact you through the website. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I try to respond to as many people as possible, particularly, you know, if they want to share something or want to talk about something that they're dealing with. I try to spend, you know, a couple of hours a week on the phone just with our customers or potential customers. And Ted, thank you so much. These were some intuitive questions. I can tell, you know, you really care about this stuff. It shows, and keep up the good work yourself.
I appreciate it as well. And you're welcome to come back anytime and love to have you. And we can explore this even more on a future show. But thanks for coming and really, you know, digging in deep into Golf Forever and the program and just some of the many benefits and just really giving people a better insight into, you know, getting a better life and a more fulfilling life and let's be honest. I mean, we all love this great game of golf and we want to get out there and be better. But more importantly, we want to have fun at it. And you can't have fun if you're achy all the time and you're, you know, schlepping around the 18 holes because you're out of energy and you just don't have the stamina or you are in pain or aches and that. Definitely consult your medical professional before you start anything. Go through the assessment. They'll on Golf Forever's website. You can reach out to them, contact them. They'll assess you and get you on the right track. But, Jeremy, thank you very much, as always. And, again, the website is golfforever.com. Thank you, and have a great rest of your week and great weekend. And I'll see you next time on Golf Talk Live.
Thanks so much, Ted.
All right, appreciate it. Bye-bye. All right, that was my very special guest, founder and chief experience officer for Golf Forever. Again, that website is golfforever.com. All of the information is there. You can make a purchase of the swing trainer. It's worth it. I've got one. I definitely highly recommend it. And lots of good information. But do your research. Obviously, I always recommend that you do your research first. It's really about changing the way you feel and really organizing your thoughts and a better pattern that's going to help you play much better golf. And this is a game that, as I said, we all love. Those of us that play it and those of us that teach in it, and we want to keep going as long as we can, and this is a great way to do that. All right, I will be back next week with another Coach's Corner panel. Our golf special golf travel section will be back next week as well, sponsored by Golf Breaks by PGA Tour. My good buddy Robert Coffin, co-host of that segment, will be joining me, and another great guest as well. And then also my insightful interview will follow that segment. So make sure you tune in next Thursday here on Golf Talk Live. God bless everybody and have a great weekend. I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us. We hope you enjoyed this week's broadcast of Golf Talk Live. We'd like to thank this week's Coach's Corner panel and a special thank you to tonight's guest. Remember to join Ted every Thursday from 6 to 8 p.m. Central on Golf Talk Live. And be sure to follow Ted on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. If you're interested in being a guest on Golf Talk Live, send Ted an email at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. This has been a production of the iGolf Sports Network.